Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Janet Devlin is a singer-songwriter from Northern Ireland who first captured public attention with a viral audition and subsequent place as a finalist on The X Factor UK in 2011. Known for her distinctive ethereal voice, Janet quickly established herself as a unique artist, blending folk, pop, and acoustic influences. Throughout her career, she has been candid about her struggles with mental health, using her music as a platform to explore themes of vulnerability, self-acceptance, and personal growth. Her 2020 album Confessional was a deeply personal project accompanied by a memoir that delved into battles with addiction and mental illness. Janet then entered a bold new chapter and embraced her love of country music and released her first alternative country single, Place Called Home, in 2021. Over a period of months, she continued to develop her songwriting in the genre for her third album, Emotional Radio, alongside collaborators including Ben Earl from The Shires, Katie Ray, Jamie Sellers, and Ian Barter. She further refined the tracks throughout 2022 and early 2023 after being invited by Russell Crowe to open for him at his live shows across Australia and Europe. In addition to her musical endeavors, Janet was the subject of a powerful documentary aired on BBC One entitled Janet Devlin, Young, Female, and Addicted. During the program, she confronts her addiction to alcohol and meets other young women affected by problematic drinking. It became one of the platform's top streamed documentaries. Janet's commitment to artistic authenticity and her openness about life's challenges have solidified her status as a powerful voice in contemporary music, resonating with listeners worldwide. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Janet Devlin. Where in the world are you and how are you doing?
I am currently in London and I'm doing good. And thank you for having me.
Okay, so now let's rewind. At what age, whether a child or teenager, did you think, cool, I want to be creating music, I want to be in the entertainment world? And how did that journey progress?
So apparently when my mum asked me when I was a kid, so I must have been about 5 or 6, when she goes, what do you want to be when you grow up? I said singer. And she said, good luck finding that at the job center. So she was like, in fairness, that sounds like she was putting me down. But, you know, she was the one that drove me to singing lessons and she took me all around the country to do singing competitions and things like this. So she was by no means squashing me. She was just trying to inject a bit of reality into me. As far as actually pursuing music, I mean, my nan really, really pushed my mom to take me to singing lessons, to actually start taking singing seriously when I was about 14, 15. And then I did, but then I went off and I started drumming, and that was kind of my focus then. I loved singing, but I didn't like the pressure of being a singer, whereas I felt that if I was a drummer, I could be an integral part of a band, but not be at the front. Okay. So I liked that notion, yeah. And then I did a bunch of singing competitions to get money for a drum kit, because I would never win, but I'd place, and that might be £100 or £200. So I was saving for this drum kit, which I did buy eventually. In that process, my best friend came and watched me do some competitions, and she bought me a video camera with the stipulation that I had to film YouTube videos, like singing YouTube videos. And I did, which I think in like 2011, early 2011 or 2010, I'd already got like 20,000 subscribers, which was a lot for like 2010. And then X Factor were accepting video auditions that year, and my mum was like, well, why don't you send in a video? And that's what I did. And I just expected it to just not go very far. But it just kind of kept snowballing. And then, because during that process, I was like, I was going to take the year out of school anyway to do music. And funny enough, I was going to make my first like country EP or like country album or whatever. But then the show just kind of kept going and going. And I ended up, you know, doing it, and then started writing properly, like properly writing and recording stuff after the show. But I'd always written And I had recorded a few demos, but like I'm talking like an old computer microphone, like from home. But yeah, so I actually started taking it seriously and professionally at 17.
Are you still playing the drums?
No, I don't think I've drummed since I drummed on one of my Christmas songs a few years
Okay.
ago. and I haven't touched it since.
You referenced the pressure of being a singer and being the drummer. At that point, you were feeling the pressure of being the focus, whereas being in the drummer, you'd still be able to be participating, but you wouldn't have to have the focus all on you.
Yeah, I just didn't think I had the charisma because I was so
Okay.
shy. I was
Yes.
such a shy kid that I was like, somebody else is probably going to be really good at that and like talking to an audience and all this kind of stuff. So I may as well just take a back seat here.
Okay.
Yeah, so I just didn't think I'd be good at it.
Obviously, that has changed over time. Was X Factor one of the key things that gave you that extra confidence to feel, okay, I can do it?
Yeah, I mean, when I got accepted to do the judges audition, I literally was going on there to find out whether or not I could sing or whether my family were lying to me or whatever. It's like that was it. So actually doing the show, like it did give me the confidence then to really just try and pursue it professionally. So it was really good for that because I don't know if I would have, had that m had as much confidence to go and
Yes.
take it seriously.
Going into the X Factor experience, going in, was it just like, okay, let's see what happens? And as it kept snowballing, was it like, oh, wow? Or did you even have a chance to think because these things happen so quickly?
I just assumed that every time I would get to like a decision-making point that I was just going to get kicked out. So
Okay.
I kind of had to like keep reevaluating my goals. And then that meant that my goal was that when I got onto the live shows was to get on the tour because you don't get paid unless you go on the tour. So
Oh, okay.
once I got on the tour, I was like, all right, I'm happy enough to go home now. I feel like, I've done my bit here. And then I knew that I wanted to write my own album, and I came off the show and I was offered a bunch of deals, all of which were like trying to like obviously profit on the fact that your profile is high,
Yes.
but it would have meant not writing my own songs, so I had to decline. I declined all the deals because
Oh.
I didn't have any ego or anything at the time where it was like, if I can't write music, if I can't write my own music, I have no qualms about being a cruise ship singer or going and singing at Butlins or anything like this.
Yeah.
I was fine with that because there's good money in it, and I don't have to pretend that I'm an artist, I didn't. I didn't care about all of that at all. So I wanted to try and write my first album and see if I was any good at it. And I really enjoyed writing, and I felt like my songs were decent. So I decided, yeah, that I am definitely not going to take a deal for to sing other people's music. And it's been something that's been quite important for me in this journey of being an artist is that I do want to write my own songs, and even if somebody sent me the best song, I do sometimes question about releasing it. Maybe not now. I feel like I could
Yes.
probably release somebody else's song now, but in the integral maybe first 5 or 6 years,
Yes.
I had this fear of singing to somebody else's song, it doing really well, and everybody just being like, oh well, see, you didn't even write. She doesn't even write her own music,
Okay.
that kind of thing. Whereas, no, I could do that. I've written enough music to not care.
Okay, so it's the basic point that you've had your own repertoire for as many years and you've built that up, and your reputation is that other songs coming through, it wouldn't be that much, not that it's not much of a difference because it's not your song, but it would be like, okay, people know me for this. It's okay if I sing other people's songs.
Yeah, I think it was always like I wanted to earn my stripes in the
Yes.
industry. Because I guess obviously everyone thinks you do a show like that and it's like a back door in, even though at times it can close a lot more doors than open. But I wanted to, because I did it so young, I did TV at 16, that I was like, well, I have the freedom to go and make mistakes and make crappy music or like write some crap songs and whatever, it doesn't
Yes.
matter because I was young and it's okay to do that. And whenever I put out my first album, I then said to myself that like, yeah, after this, like when I'm like 24, 25, I'll go into country. That was always on the 10-year plan, like I'll go and do country, but up until then I'm just going to play around with sound, play around with the genre and just have fun with it all, and try and figure it all out because, you know, you have to do, what is it, like 10,000 hours? You know what I mean? Like, and it's what the 10 years to become an overnight success thing and all of that. Like, I really wanted to earn my spot in the industry to, in a hope to be taken seriously, which I feel has only kind of started happening, which I'm not mad about, but it's definitely, I feel like a very different energy now when people talk about me and whenever like radio DJs talk about me and actually getting good radio play and things that I never would have got. And they would have literally said like, yeah, we can't play her because she went on TV. So now after, yeah, slogging it out for, I've been releasing original music for 11 years. So it's taken quite a long time, but it's nice to finally see the change.
Okay, so a couple more questions around X Factor. Were there elements as you were going through the process that you were like surprised about that you didn't realize would be part of the process?
No, I think what surprises a lot of people is obviously like the fact that it's reality TV. But for some reason, like I knew exactly like what to expect. Like I wasn't going on there thinking like this is the dream factory and I get to come in here and become a big, massive household superstar singer and la 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 la. It was I very much knew that I was going on to a reality TV show to perform and to try and use that to the best of my ability, but also understanding that media, social media, the general public, all these things, they're going to have opinions of me. And like, there's going to be articles that come out that maybe aren't real because they need viewership on the show. Like, I had already understood all of that. So I think I can remember people being shocked at that, but I was a bit like, well, it is a TV show. Like, you know, I
Yes,
said, what do you
exactly.
expect? You know, and it was very clear at one point. I won't say too much, but I mentioned to one of the media team, I was like, why is this a headline? This isn't even real. I'm not, I haven't fallen out with such and such. Like, that's not real. And they were like, it doesn't matter. Like, it's there to get views. And I'm like, oh, great.
So when you read something like that about yourself, and obviously from the beginning you understood what it was about, but when you read that something like that has, they've created the story around you, in the beginning, how did you deal with that? And did it frustrate you, or did you just realize, okay, it's just part of the game?
I think I for one or two of them I was a little bit annoyed because like I don't fall out with people. I don't argue. There were times where I stood my ground on the show because I felt like it was important and I kind of knew already like pick your battles. Like there's some things you just get away, you just let go and there's some things you got to fight for. But it was more annoying just like maybe the Irish Catholic guilt or something that whenever it's like, oh, she's fallen out with this person. I'm like, I did not. That's not the type of me. I'm not raised like that. I wouldn't yell my vo raise my voice at anybody. But the majority of the headlines and stuff like didn't really bother me. I did panic whenever I seen the one that about the kidnapping scare. I mean, that was interesting. I only found out about the fact that there was a kidnapping scare a week after.
Was that an actual thing, or was that a made-up story?
So it's hard to deduce, really. I just remember this one week where everybody else was getting to go to the shop, which like going to the supermarket was like our treat in the week that we could like get out of the house. I know it sounds ridiculous, but it was a big deal. And I wasn't allowed to go to Tesco. And I was like, why am I not allowed to go to Tesco? Everybody else is getting to go. And then there was a few other things like that I wasn't allowed to do. And I felt like I was being heavily watched one week where it was like I heard someone in another room being like, where's Janet? And it was like, oh, she's, you know. And I was like, I feel trapped and I don't like it. And I found out that weekend then when my mum came over and I was having a conversation with a few of the staff and my mum was there and the mum brought it up and they went, oh, yeah, well, we didn't want to tell Janet, but yeah, we doubled the security and we did this, that, and the other because apparently someone, I think, because where we lived, there was like a public access, not to the actual house, but you could stand on the outside of the property. And apparently somebody said something along the lines of, we'll come back and get Janet. And now, whether or not that was a photographer that meant like coming back and take a photograph, or whether or not that was a dodgy person, I don't know. And also, I don't know what they would have said to me at the time because they didn't want to scare me, which was the reason why they didn't tell me in the first place. But I was like, okay. So I don't know. I just
Okay.
found out that there was a whole scare.
Okay, last question around this thing. So you mentioned that you got a lot of de offers of deals after the show, but it was for singing other people's songs. Do you maybe feel the reason for that is when you guys are on the show, you're mainly singing cover versions. You sometimes are allowed to sing your own songs, but the perception is, oh, this is a person that can only sing other people's songs and not really create their own.
I mean, and I mean this with all the love in my heart, like X Factor is posh karaoke. Like it is. But it's fine, 'cause like it's cool. It's like it's all in good spirit, and I'm not saying that to be hateful. But it's kind of just posh karaoke, and that's fine. And you are just kind of put into this bracket of not an artist, just a singer. And my thing was always, I'm not the best singer, but I'm really creative and I do write my own music and I do this, that, and the other. So I felt like I wanted to go and live and die by my own sword. If I put together my first album and it did terrible and everyone was like, oh my God, girl, you can't write, I'd be like, okay, cool. I will go and be a singer. Totally didn't mind. Because like what little girl doesn't dream of being an artist, you know? Like, and I wanted to do that. And you know, I love writing and I love words and I love making things. So it was like I may as well try and take this seriously as a whole entity of being an artist instead of just being a singer. And I'm glad I did, because like it's been great to evolve not only as a singer but also evolve as a songwriter.
Let's dive into what's been happening since. So you referenced you've been creating music for 11 years. And you want to dabble into different types of genres and then move into country, which you have now. You said you always want to do a dive into country and create country. What is the appeal for you? What is the pull towards country?
It's so hard to explain to people who haven't been to where I grew up, but the county I'm from is called County Tyrone. And it's jokingly known as Farmers County. And when I tell you that, like, everything, even down to the aesthetics, like the men dress exactly the same as the men do in the South and in America, right? Like they have their bootcut jeans, their new boots, their plaid shirt, and like they have manual labor jobs or they're farmers or whatever. There's that stereotype of like the Irish dances and things, like, because whenever the Irish like went to America and stuff, they still had their dances, and it's because that's how they met their partner. And that still happens in Ireland. It's that even when my mum was a girl, the dances, instead of being like the old-timey Irish music and your like eight Irish dances or whatever, it became country. So my mom, she's what, 60. So even 60 years ago, they were like, yeah, having these dances for like country music where you'd meet your partner. And it's the most popular genre in Ireland. And then also, it's just the most listened to genre in my county. Like, that's what most people listen to, all the music nights or country nights. And I didn't question any of it. I don't know. I just, when I said when I was going to take the year out from school to do music, like I was naturally just going to go and do a country album. You know, it's just a thing. All of my childhood, like early memories, were country music or bluegrass. And I was in a Ceilidh band as a kid. So, like, you know, you do notice the similarities of bluegrass and Irish folk music, and obviously the Irish going over to like the Appalachians and all of that, and how that leads to the history of country music as well. That's just what I knew. It's what I've listened to the most. I've clocked the most hours in, and it's a genre that I've never got bored of. So in my head, it made sense to be the genre that I would choose in my late 20s or whatever to go and just focus on and stay in, because like I said, I won't get bored of it.
Okay, so now from 0 to 3 to 4 minutes in creating a song. Yes, it takes longer than that, but that body of work, that little construction of that song, your creative process, is it different every time? Is it easy every time? Do you write by yourself? Let's unpack your creative process in creating a song.
I locked in on my creative process, I'd say about 2 years ago. I still have my days where I'll just go into a songwriting session, somebody's playing some chords on the guitar or piano, and I'll just write to that, and that's fine. But the way that I like to write is that I love research. I fall down so many rabbit holes for fun in the evenings. I like to just consume information because I got ADHD, right? So it's no coincidence that I locked in on my favorite writing style whenever I was fully medicated for my ADHD. So what I do is like Emotional Rodeo, the song is a good example. I said the title in a psychiatry session with my shrink, and I said, "Oh, I feel like an emotional rodeo," and I wrote it down. So then I take that, and then I'll put a podcast on in the evening while I'm chilling out. And I'm like, "Emotional rodeo, okay." Come up with some potential song idea concepts, right? Fine. Then I make a glossary of terms, terminology, and words to do with a rodeo, or like, I mean, I know a lot of words about emotions because, human. So it's just this big glossary of words, and then I write down a bunch of idioms. Some of them I write straight from just the common vernacular way of saying it, or things that I've edited and amended. So I'll come up with all of these lines, and then I'll improv on those lines myself, and then I'll write example verses or example choruses, and then I'll lay down some notes on my dictaphone if I feel somewhat compelled. But sometimes it's just the research document. With Emotional Rodeo, I went into a songwriting session with Katie Ray, who I love. And it's normally just me and her that work together, but she invited Ben Earl from the Shires. They're a big country band here in the UK. And we sat down, and then I invite them into my document because, notes on Apple. So I invite them
Oh,
in.
yeah.
Yeah. And then everybody can use this big document. And thinking behind it is that I've done all the Googling for everybody. It's like all of everything of what you could need to do with an emotional rodeo is in this document, along with example phrases. So it basically means that the song, when we start writing, like when I've done that way of working, I've written a song in like a half hour, and or we've written a full everything top to bottom in like an hour. So it means I get more songs done in a session. And I just think it's a really fun way to work because, yeah, you don't have to look anything up. It's all kind of there. And
That's
also,
in.
sometimes all you need to do is read a line of something to spark off a whole chain of events.
Yes.
So, yeah.
It's I love that what you said. I know enough about emotions. Human, hello.
Yeah.
I'm something about that. That's so funny. I love me a CD. I still budget my CDs every month. For me, it's an energy exchange to say thank you to you guys for all the hard work that you put in. I love the journey of the choice, the unpacking the booklets, listening to song from one to whatever number. I'm sure you are aware potentially that physical's massive comeback. CDs in the UK, there's a basket of products that they gauge for exchange purposes. Obviously, those products have to have high exchanges. And because of the upsurge of CDs, they are back in the basket. Vinyls last year, the biggest sales since 1990 in the UK. Cassettes even on an upward trajectory. But then we've also got streaming platforms that people consume music on. What are your observations of the landscape at the moment?
I think I have to look at my way of doing things, which is not as an artist, as a person who enjoys listening to music. What I do is that I use my streaming. I use YouTube Music because it pays really well, which people get confused because they think that if you put a music video on YouTube and that artist gets like buttons for like a billion views. Actually, YouTube Music, their streaming music software, pays the artist really well. So
Oh, okay.
I use YouTube Music, and I'll have my songs on in the car. And what I do is that if I've listened to an album once or twice and I've gone, I really enjoy that. Like I set myself, you can only listen to this album twice on a streaming platform. If you want to listen to it again, even if it's just one or two songs, you got to buy it. I, a lot of the times, will buy on like iTunes or Amazon Music, where you can, because I don't want to have more things a lot of the time because I move house so much, it's disgusting. So I just pay for the download of it. And that's kind of my rule with it, is that if I really enjoy something, I have to buy it because you can't, in my head, I can't just get away with like, Chris Stapleton dropped a new album. I've listened to it 20 times, but he's got like nothing from that. You know what I mean? Like, and a lot of the times as well, if it's like an independent artist, I really do try and like buy it even more so because like they don't have a major label behind them, like, or they're not getting billions of streams and this, that, and the other. So that's kind of my rule with it. The fact that vinyl has gone up so incredibly makes complete sense to me, because CD is redundant now in the same way that vinyl was 20 years ago. You know, it's like there's who's gonna no car has a CD player that's made recently. You know what I mean? So when you buy a physical, it's solely really for collectible reasons. And that's why I do like to focus on like nice vinyls and nice colors and things like that, because even if somebody doesn't play it, you see the artwork bigger, which is awesome because, you know, you take pride in your artwork and people get to see the text in a much more easier to digest manner. The text is bigger. I get that CDs, like I still have a car with a CD player in it, so I do like to buy the occasional CD. Like when I was out in Nashville recording the album, I went and I bought like 20 CDs from the record store because I was like, perfect, I can play these in my car. I still make cassettes. Cassettes for me is that, and I said to the label before we made the cassettes, I was like, I want to make these, but I don't want to make a profit. I want to find out the minimum price I can sell them for that's still chart eligible, but is the minimum. Like, we're not going to lose money making them, but we're not going to make money making them either. And I wanted it because currently, because the album's just out, it's £5.50, right? But by the time I go on tour and the album's been out, we'll end up selling that for like £3. And I always want someone to be able to own the album in whatever way, or to be able to go to a gig and pick up something from the merch desk that's you can buy with pocket change. You know, I always want there to be like an entry level for everybody. So for me, it's a way that somebody can leave a gig, having bought a wee physical of it, and nobody gets left out.
So, Janet, what's coming up over the next few months?
We're looking at one, going back to Nashville and doing some more recording, and two, we're looking at a tour. I'm just going to try my best to convince the label to put me and the whole band on the road, because I did a launch night in London with a full band and it was sick. So I hopefully we'll get everybody out in the road, but we'll see. So tour, more album, like more recording, and there'll definitely be more releasing as well. So, and you know, hopefully a few bit more like maybe music videos and all that kind of stuff. Like, so yeah.
And do you enjoy creating music videos?
I love making a music video, and like sometimes there's more budget than others, but it's still a fun concept for me, even if it's a visualizer, which is the it's like a minute 30 and it loops. Like, I think it's really fun to even if there's no budget and I'm making it myself, I've done that in the past, it's still fun to do because it allows you a creative outlet. I like watching other people's, so yeah. And I film a lot and I edit a lot, so it's not that big of a task for me. But also music videos themselves, like I love doing, because I grew up in the era of like, you know, watching the TV for the music videos. Like when I think of songs from my childhood, it's like, oh, the one with that in the video, that's how I remember them. So it's totally self-indulgent, but I want to keep that alive for myself because that's what I loved watching.
Okay, so I love this game. I know if I had to ask you this question in 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 years, I know your answer will be different every time. I understand that and I recognize that. I'm not saying favorite, I'm saying top of mind. If you had to push play to five songs by other artists once we finish this conversation, and if you can't think of specific songs, just naming five artists, whichever is easier, who would those five artists be? And if you can think of five songs of theirs, what would those songs be?
You know what's actually really easy if I just go onto my YouTube music, because I literally look at the things that I automatically play. So this is my listen again.
Okay, lovely.
Neon You by, and they've got quite an intricate name. Maskadine Bloodline. Second One to Know, Chris Stapleton. Down to the Honky Tonk, Jake Owen. Blue Side of the Mountain by the Steel Drivers. And Last Train to Nowhere by Ghost Hounds.
Lovely. Some of those are on my list. I need to add the rest, so thank you for that. So, Janet, the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message to the audience, what would you like to say?
Oh gosh, do you know what? In the times that we're living in, it's going to be absolutely not thinking about music. I just want to say, lead with love. Like, before you react to anything, before you allow your blood pressure to go up, just lead with love is all I'll say.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.